In Any Other World by Yokok, read by Padaka. Summary. I have been enchanted by some witch's magic, and I, Prince Adam of Andalasia, find myself a stranger in a strange land. May I call upon your kindness, or, if not your kindness, then the respect due to a visiting noble, and ask to be taken to your court and presented to your monarch? It's a beautiful day in Andalasia. The birds are singing gently in the brightly colored trees, and the sun sparkles in the bluebell sky. In a quaint cottage that sits in the corner of a lovely gloaming, a young and fresh-faced maiden is singing to herself as she sweeps the rough-hewed boards of the floor. A bird perches on the windowsill and sings along with her, and soon they're joined by a chipmunk and a friendly toad. "You know, Chipmunk," Katie O'Connell says, for that is the lass's name. "I do have such fun in this lovely cottage with creatures like you and Toad over there." The Toad grunts his agreement. "But sometimes, just sometimes, I sort of wish my prince would hurry up and get here. I do long to know what the castle looks like and to thwart the evil witch, although I'm sure she can't be that evil after all. And to get on with it all. But alas, I shall wait until the day comes. In the meantime, there's more washing to do." And she turns to a sink conveniently piled with lovely patterned crockery. All of a sudden, the twittering calm of the sunny day is rent by a thundering trumpet blast. "Ahoy!" comes a shout from the edge of the gloaming. "You there, in the cottage! It is I, your prince!" "Oh!" gasps Katie. She runs to the window and pushes aside the charming blue shutters. From afar, the prince sees a pretty blonde head peek out. Long hair shimmers in flowing waves. Graceful feminine features shine with warmth and happiness. Abruptly, he pulls at the horse's reins. Something feels wrong. "Sir?" asks his squire, riding beside him. "We have found the unfortunate motherless lass, wasting in a poor cottage in the deepest woods. You must now rejoin with her to the castle, where you shall live happily ever after." The squire's voice rises in triumph as he says the final words. He quite likes things to go correctly, and in this story, the prince and the maiden go to the castle and live happily ever after, which is how it should be. And now that it is about to happen, he feels very content indeed. "Yes, well," says Prince Adam doubtfully. His black hair gleams in the sun, and the shimmering black and gold brocade of his cloak shimmers harder as he shakes his head. "I don't know. I was expecting to feel love at first sight. I don't feel anything." He pouts his lips worriedly. "Perhaps I should feel it when I hold her in my arms?" "Yes," says the squire, grabbing hold of that proposal eagerly. He's starting to worry that this may not be going as smoothly as he'd like. "Yes, yes, let us hasten to the cottage, Highness. After you." And with another triumphant blast of the trumpet, the horses continue through the gloaming. Not long after, the prince has the maiden ensconced in his broad arms. Her tender eyelashes flutter against his broad chest. She sighs prettily and lifts her countenance to his, parting her lips for true love's kiss. Their eyes meet. Nope, says Katie, just as the prince says, I don't think... What? Asks the squire. What is stopping you two? I'd like to be back to the castle before nightfall, please. And I've heard reports of dragons in these parts. So if we could get a move on with the whole love at first sight thing, that would be quite convenient. Oh, Katie says. Well, somehow I really don't think you're my prince after all. Adam is feeling as though she might be right, but it still hurts to hear the words. And why not? He asks indignantly. I traveled across the endless sea to get here. I followed the unicorn of truth through the never-ending woods, and I even evaded the trolls of confusion. I must be your prince. Only true love could have led me to the completion of this impossible journey. His fingers, painted with black polish, twist nervously at his massive rings. If this were true love, we would know, says Katie. True love is the most magical thing in the world, after all. Well, duh, says Prince Adam. Everyone knows that. He's been looking forward to true love since he knew what it was, in fact. He just knows that the magic and joy of finding that one magical connection must be the most wonderful feeling, the most powerful, overwhelming sensation. That when he finds his true love, nothing will matter. The world will fade out and leave only them two, and it will be... Oh, says Prince Adam. He looks at the maiden again. He sees her, but he also sees the pretty cottage and the happy animals, and even his impatient squire. Nothing has faded out. There is no ringing, no bells of joy, no magic. Katie looks at him sympathetically. You see, she says. It's okay. I don't feel it either. Prince Adam looks confused. What do I do now, though? He asks. You're the only devastated single lass in the kingdom this generation. There are no wars. There are no princesses in other lands locked in towers or guarded by dragons. You are supposed to be my true love, you know. He knows he sounds a bit petulant, but he can't really help it. Princes marry maidens. There's no other way, really, and it's looking like that didn't work out for him. So he has the right to be upset about it if he wants. I have the right to be upset about this, he says. Katie nods sympathetically. Of course, she says. How do you think I feel? Although, to tell you the truth, I had always wanted to travel a little before getting married. I would have forgotten all about that, of course, if you were my true love. Duty to one's country, heirs, all of that. But seeing as how this isn't working out, I think I'm going to travel across the sea to Dalinar. I've always wanted to learn to speak Dalinese, and the things you hear about the food. That's all very well for you, Prince Adam says irritably, but what am I to do? Dalinar already has a prince, and I've already disguised myself as a wandering minstrel and traveled to the furthest lands and come back with the Stone of the Gods. And now there are no more quests, and I want my true love. He looks like he might be on the verge of tears, just a little, and the squire goes to put a comforting hand on his shoulder, then thinks better of it. Prince Adam has a fondness for heavily spiked epaulettes. Katie's eyes brighten suddenly. I think I know just the thing, she says. Robin, Toad, lead the way! The animals twitter happily and jump out the window of the cottage, and the three humans, although they leave by the door, soon follow in their wake. Half an hour later, the squire has brambles in his hair, and Katie's dress is torn, and Prince Adam is mourning the disappearance of one of his epaulets, torn off by a particularly nasty bout with a low-hanging branch. I'm sorry, Katie says apologetically. The animals tell me of this place, but I've never actually been myself, you know. I didn't realize the way would be quite so untrodden. Ah! Here we are! Another gloaming appears suddenly, as if by magic. Bright sun shines down from the break in the forest canopy, rays falling on the ground in a perfect, glittering circle around an old stone well. crumbling and covered with picturesque moss. "Oh," said the squire, "I understand. We shall drink the water, and we shall each be granted a wish. And you and Prince Adam will wish to forget all of this about not feeling it and the magic of true love, and return to the castle together." He sounds slightly desperate. Things really are not going according to plan. "Of course not, silly," says Prince Adam. "That's not it at all. No, I shall drink of this well, and the lovely water nymph trapped within, held there by an evil curse as ancient as the well itself, shall call on me for aid. I will rescue her, of course, and then we will share true love's kiss. Me and the nymph, that is. And then we can all return to the castle, and you can go on your, travels," he adds, looking at Katie. "Yes, exactly," says Katie. "But in order for that to happen, you have to drink, of course. Go on, there should be a bucket hanging there, somewhere off the side." "Oh, right," says Prince Adam. He walks over and looks into the well. It's very deep and very dark, and he can't see the sides at all. He's just reaching in to feel around for the bucket when suddenly he hears a, "Good luck! I do hope you find who you're looking for." And two ladylike hands shove him over the side. Before he knows it, he's falling and falling, and then everything's shining and glowing around him, and the light grows and grows and grows. And then everything goes black. In another world entirely, Chris Allen is having a very terrible day. At work, he was lectured twice about showing more enthusiasm for his job, as though it's possible to show enthusiasm about filing insurance records for hours every day, he thinks. And then on top of that, he was moved to a smaller cubicle, and his new cubicle mate smells like pickles. Chris hates pickles. The only thing redeeming this day is that tonight he's got a gig at a club. Okay, so it's really just an open mic night at the coffee shop near his crappy apartment, but at least he'll get to sing for people. He clutches his guitar case tighter as he hurries along the rain-washed street. He's not really watching where he's going, because his head is full of the songs he plans to sing tonight. And maybe that's why he suddenly trips and falls flat on his face. Well, it could be that. Or it could be that all of a sudden a sewer cap lifts itself up and trips him. Or, well, maybe that's not even it, because now a man's climbing out of the sewer hole wearing some type of spiky costume and a tiara, and a lot of leather. "Good sir!" The man's voice commands power in this weird way. Chris can't help but turn to look at him after he picks himself up off the street. "I've been enchanted by some witch's magic, and I, Prince Adam of Andalasia, find myself a stranger in a strange land. May I call upon your kindness? Or, if not your kindness, then the respect due to a visiting noble, and ask to be taken to your court and presented to your monarch." Chris really, really does not have time for this. "Look, are you some kind of performance artist?" he asks wearily. "I'm just trying to get to the bean tree, man. It's like 2 blocks away, and normally I'd stay and let you do what you gotta do for your thesis or commission or whatever, but I've got this slot and I'm gonna miss it." The freaky dude stands up very straight. "Sir, I understand," he says. "You have a mission to complete, to find the bean tree. If there is a giant therein, then I offer my services to you. For I am an accomplished giant killer. Or if the foe be rather some warlock or dragon, I have expertise in those areas as well. For in my homeland of Andalasia, we do often encounter..." "No!" Chris says. He's not sure why he's even still talking to this guy, except that he's starting to worry about him a little. He just wants to make sure he's not actually crazy, and then he'll get going. "It's a coffee house, man. They have this open mic night. I was just going to play my guitar, and I don't want to be late." says the prince. The man, Chris thinks furiously, because this dude is not actually a prince. That's insane. And his whole tone changes all of a sudden. Music? I'm not familiar with the music of this strange land, but if you let me, I would love to observe. I've made sort of a study of it, foreign music traditions. Not a fit pursuit for a prince, of course, but in my foolish youth. Anyhow, if you'd oblige, may I accompany you to this musical gathering? It's a free country, Chris says, picking up his guitar. He heads down the street again, and it's not until he's walked a block that he realizes the prince, Prince Adam, is following him, hesitant but there, just to his side and behind. Dude, it's cool, he says. Because, whatever, another person in the audience can only be a good thing, right? Even if the person might actually be schizophrenic? Anyone can come. The guy clears his throat. I wouldn't like to impose on your traditions, of course, but if it's really quite all right, I must admit, it's very exciting, the idea of music. New music, you know? Because we have only the traditional ballads in Andalusia, and I've sung all of those so very many times, and foreign music can't be sung in the castle, treason and all that. And, well, he sounds really excited. Chris would be flattered if he wasn't so sure the guy was a psycho. Look, it's fine, he says, and sighs internally. This is exactly what his mother was afraid of when he told her he was moving to New York. I'm inviting you. All right, you're my guest. It's official and all that. So just be quiet and walk faster. We're gonna be late. Thank you, good sir, Adam says, so genuine and eager. And Chris ignores the way the strange man's happiness makes him want to smile and blush. The first two people to perform sort of suck. As nice as Chris is, he can't even deny it. And Adam's face, which is covered in glitter and smeared eyeliner and strangely adorable, falls a little, just a little, even though he keeps talking about how exciting it is to hear new music, as though Hotel California and Living on a Prayer are original songs or something. You know, Adam says, curiously, in Findala, singing skill is considered a mark of evil, and those born with the talent are encouraged to suppress it. In fact, I was almost burned at the stake there after they heard me singing in the bath. Perhaps those two are of Findalese origin? Chris bursts out laughing. Yeah, that would totally explain it, he says. And he's still chuckling as he picks up his case and starts to take out his guitar. Is it your turn then? Adam asks eagerly. Yeah, Chris says, still fumbling with the straps. And Adam says, oh, I'm sure you'll be wonderful. I can just tell. Suddenly, Chris is nervous. He doesn't want Adam to think of him as Findalese or whatever. He shakes his head in confusion and goes to sit down at the mic. Playing tonight is harder than usual because of this weird nervousness, but it's also easier because for some reason, looking out at Adam's silly, beaming face makes everything fade away until it doesn't feel like he's playing for other people at all, just for Adam, who's looking at him like he just invented music. He plays for 15 minutes, some of his own songs, and then he finishes with a cover of Falling Slowly, that song that had won an Oscar a year ago. And when he puts the guitar down and looks up again, Adam's crying, actually crying. Just one or two tears rolling down his face, but they're unmistakably there. And Chris feels like he doesn't even know. He can't explain it. He feels like he can do anything in the world, like his music matters. Like maybe coming to New York to try and make it big wasn't so naive and stupid and childish after all. By the time he gets back to his table, Adam's got himself under control. Or at least he's stopped crying. Chris, he says. And Chris realizes vaguely that he announced his own name before he started to play. That's why Adam knows it. That was... Why are you not the high bard of the land? If we had music like that in Andalasia, why then maybe I would have... Who knows? He falls silent all of a sudden and shrugs a little. Amazing, he says, like he can't believe it. It wasn't a big deal, man, Chris says, blushing, but inside, he's sort of glowing. And the room's gone fuzzy around the edges again. Did you say you sing? I bet you're easily as good as that. Seriously, you should. There's an open slot after this guy. You should sing. Adam's blue eyes widen in shock. Really? These people would let? They would oblige? Of course, dude. It's open mic night. Anyone can sing. You saw those two guys before, who sort of sucked. If they can do it, you can totally do it. Don't argue. I'm gonna go sign you up right now. He heads over to the list and, after a moment's hesitation, puts down Prince Adam, Traditional Songs of Andalasia. The guy seems really convinced about this whole backstory, or whatever it is, and Chris isn't gonna fight it. They sit through another 20 minutes of mediocre singing, and then it's Adam's turn. He goes to the microphone and bows low, then clears his throat. Chris hears a chuckle from a table behind him, and all of a sudden he feels like a total asshole. Meeting a crazy man on the street and inviting him to listen to you sing is one thing, but encouraging him to get up there and make what's probably inevitably going to be a fool of himself in front of a room of strangers, well, that's just sort of a shitty thing to do. Not that he was trying to embarrass Adam, though. He just sort of forgot, maybe, that this guy is crazy. Just for a second. He's just about to stand up and leave quietly, back away before he has to watch the carnage unfold up there, when the delusional man off the streets starts singing made-up songs from a made-up country. And then Adam opens his mouth and... Chris sits back down, hard. He listens to a 4-song set of Andalasian folk music with his mouth hanging open in disbelief. Because when Adam sings, it's like he's there, in Andalasia, like he can feel the wind and the trees and the blue sky, whatever the fuck Adam's going on about. It's real, it's gorgeous, and his voice? Holy crap! He loses track of time listening, and all he can see and hear is Adam. And how in all hell was this guy wandering the streets and not signed to some big-time record label? Or at the least singing regular gigs somewhere in the city for money? When Adam stops singing, Chris feels a physical sense of loss, a sudden sadness that it's over. And he sits there, stunned, as Adam makes his way back to the table. He thinks he hears applause. How could there not be applause after that? But he isn't thinking clearly, can't focus on anything but Adam, who's smiling bright and a little bit shy, joy shining out of his eyes like a 3-year-old who's just discovered Christmas presents. That was incredible, Chris manages to say, and it's not enough at all, but it makes Adam smile even harder, grin and bounce up and down a little, giddy. Oh, did you like it? He asks. It was so amazing, you know, to be up there, to have the people sit and listen and, well, in Andalasia, singing's just normal. It's not something you do for other people, you know? Chris doesn't know, actually, but maybe that explains why Adam's wandering the streets here and not singing in Andalasian concert halls. If a made-up country even has concert halls. He shakes his head. Things are getting sort of confusing. Well, you should be singing for other people anyway, Chris says. And Adam laughs. No, no, I can't do that. I'm a prince. I have to marry and run my country and do all those things. Okay, so he's still insane. Whatever. All that matters, maybe, is that he shouldn't be wandering around on a rainy night, probably getting bronchitis and ruining those vocal cords forever. It just seems wrong. And before Chris has time to process what a truly terrible idea this is, he opens his mouth again. Adam? Prince Adam? He can feel himself blushing at the ridiculousness of the title, but Adam just smiles at him kindly. Call me Adam, he says. My title can get a little uncomfortable, and I feel that we are already becoming friends. Yes? Yeah, Chris says. Sure. Adam, do you have anywhere to stay tonight? You know, to sleep? Adam looks confused for a second. I had intended to make camp in the nearest forest, under some sheltering branches, perhaps with the help of a woodland creature or two, he says. That is, if I could not make it to the palace by nightfall. How close is the palace exactly? There isn't a palace, Chris says, frustrated. This is a democracy, you know. No kings, no queens, just the will of the people. Adam gives him a very blank look. Anyways, the palace is very, very far away, he says, giving up. It's very, very far away, and the woods here they're evil. The woodland creatures are not friendly. I wouldn't want to stay there if I were you. Perhaps a local inn with a jolly old innkeeper and a nice wild boar roasting over the fire? Adam offers. Chris shakes his head. Nope, no inns. But look, Adam, you can, you know, stay with me. Just for tonight, because it's raining and all. If you want to. I promise I'm not creepy or anything. Just, it's raining and cold, and I thought maybe... Adam looks at him radiantly. Why, this is so noble of you. So fine. Oh, yes. Thank you, sir. I would be honored to rest my head at your humble abode for the evening. All right then, Chris says awkwardly. It's just a few blocks away. Follow me. When they get to Chris's apartment, Adam looks around curiously, and Chris feels a sudden and unaccountable sense of shame. It's small, I know, he says. Probably not what you're used to, with the, castles and all. But I can afford the rent all by myself, which is totally worth it, because my last roommate was some weirdo with a porn addiction, and it was just bad news, man. Not that you'll be anything like that, of course. I mean, not that you're even my roommate. You're just, staying the night, and... He trails off. Adam is peering into the refrigerator now, opening it and feeling inside with his hands, and then closing it and staring at it in wonder. What enchantment is this? He asks. And Chris laughs. It's just a refrigerator, dude. It keeps things cold, you know, so meat won't spoil. Amazing, Adam says, shaking his head in awe. Chris grins helplessly, and then sobers again when he glances back at the fridge. Have you eaten yet tonight, dude? Are you hungry? I think I have some leftover Chinese, or I can make soup or something. What do you like? Adam smiles at him. I want to try the food of this land. Your native delicacies, of course, he says. Chris thinks for a moment. Chinese takeout it is, then, he answers, and takes out the cartons. Adam practically faints at the sight of the microwave. And once Chris has convinced him he isn't actually a wizard in disguise as a traveling bard, apparently Adam has experience with that kind of disguise. Something about escaping the castle and seeing the world before his true love's kiss? They sit down to eat. Adam loves lo mein and General Tao's chicken, it turns out, and hates pork fried rice, which Chris thinks is random, but really no weirder than anything else about the guy. They sit on Chris's shabby couch long after their plates have been scraped clean. Chris eats the last bites of Adam's rejected fried rice and talk. You can really live on music alone in this country? Adam asks wonderingly. In Andalasia, we have bards, of course, but that's more of a ceremonial position, really. Either traveling, which is just a convenient cover for some other occupation, or it's sort of a leisure occupation for noblemen's sons. But nothing, nothing respected, nothing important. Chris shakes his head. That sucks, man. It's hard to make it big here, but at least you can, you know? At least it's something to shoot for, having a life that's all about music. I mean, that's why I moved out of Arkansas. I want to play music, and maybe one day I'll be able to quit my crappy job and just do that. Adam looks at him for a second, then bites his lip. Do you think that I... No, that's foolish, of course. But could you just make a living from music? Chris asks. Of course you could, dude. You're amazing. I mean, I can't quit my job yet, but I definitely get gigs here and there. And you? You'd be awesome. You could probably do theater or something. Broadway, you know? He definitely could. He's got Chris pretty much believing that he's actually the prince of a made-up country. He could convince an audience of anything in the world, especially if he sang to them. Adam smiles at him with sudden brilliancy, and Chris feels his chest get warm in a way that's sort of scary. Hurriedly, he stands up and collects the plates. Let's go to bed, man, he says. The bathroom's right over there. I'll get you a blanket. I hope the couch is okay. Wonderful, Adam says sincerely, and Chris smiles and shakes his head in surrender. In the morning, Chris wakes up and rubs tiredly at his eyes as he heads towards the kitchen. Usually he stumbles around painfully until he somehow gets the coffee made, but this morning his eyes are shocked open by the smell of pure caffeine, and he moans in delight. It takes a few seconds for his brain to catch up to his nose, though, for it to occur to him to wonder why his apartment already smells like coffee. And then, all of a sudden, he remembers Adam. Prince Adam. The crazy person from the street, who is currently sitting in the middle of Chris's living room with an entire Dunkin' Donuts box of Joe, and what must be half the donuts in the store. I watched that magic mirror, Adam says excitedly, pointing at the TV, and it told me about this wonderful store, this potion shop with a magical morning brew. So I went out and got some, and Chris, the brew tastes bitter and strange, but it's ever so magical. I feel awake already, and I feel like I could run from Andalasia across the sea to Dalinar without stopping. And besides the potion, they also sold these wonderful pastries. There were so many that I didn't know what to try, so I got them all. He looks a little manic, and Chris groans internally. How much coffee did this guy drink? And who the fuck has never heard of coffee before? Even societies without microwaves or TVs have some sort of coffee, right? Chris is pretty sure that's right. Adam's doing that bouncing up and down thing now. But it's okay, because he's also handing Chris a cup of hot coffee. And as soon as he drinks it, he's going to figure out what to do with this crazy man, and everything's going to be okay. It's going to be absolutely, entirely fine, Chris thinks. And then Adam whistles loudly, and a swarm of cockroaches clambers out from every corner of the room, and Chris faints. 30 minutes later, Chris has had his coffee, and they've established that it's better for the apartment to be untidy than for it to be filled with insects. Or at least, Chris has tried to establish that, but Adam keeps wobbling his lips in this very sad way, and talking about how woodland creatures are his friends, and they just want to help. Cockroaches are not woodland creatures, Chris says for the 20th time. Plus, aren't you a prince? Don't you have, like, servants that do the cleaning for you and stuff? Animals aren't servants, Adam says, shocked. Besides, they want to help. He pouts, and Chris feels like a lot is getting lost in translation right now. This is such a lost cause. Look, Chris says finally, it's Saturday. I have the day off. Let's go somewhere, okay? An adventure, Adam says, eyes brightening. And Chris smiles at him. Yeah, an adventure. Do you want to go to the park? It's sort of like the woods, I guess. Maybe you can find some other woodland creatures. You know, furry ones, with an acceptable number of legs and all of that. Does your stable have a horse I may borrow? Adam asks, entirely seriously. Adam's outfit, particularly the tiara. Crayon, Adam says, frowning when Chris mentions it, draws a few stares, but not that many, considering. It's more the other way around, really. Adam barely refused to leave the apartment with Chris because he insisted that Chris's plaid made him look like a peasant, something he seemed to mean in the most literal way possible. And now he keeps pointing to people that they pass and whispering to Chris about what they're wearing. Where's the brocade? Adam asks. Can the people of this land not afford cloth enough for dresses? He asks when they pass yet another girl wearing jeans and a t-shirt. This is very disturbing, he says, looking at someone else. Chris doesn't even know what he's referring to. The dude's wearing slacks and a dress shirt, but Adam seems intensely concerned. He's distracted by a hot dog, which he eats with something bordering on sexual fervor. Chris has to clear his throat and look away until Adam finishes. They go to the movies next, where Adam clutches Chris's hand and yells at the people on screen. The people in the two rows in front of them turn around and shoot death glares at Adam. But Chris doesn't care. Adam's enthusiasm is actually pretty adorable. And as they walk out of the theater, Chris catches him wiping his eyes on the back of his hand. Suddenly, he has an idea. He can't put the idea into action until the next night, though, so for now, they head back to the apartment. I'm so sorry to impose, Adam says. I can always find an inn, you know. I'm not sure how I'll get home, he adds after a second. But your hospitality has been too much, really, and I'll figure something out. I can always become a traveling bard again. He laughs, but the sound is sad. Chris feels a clenching in his stomach when he thinks about Adam, sparkling, bright, naive Adam, back out on the streets, wandering around helplessly, looking for a place that doesn't exist. No, he says. It's fine. You can stay here as long as you need. The rent's covered. I have the room. Plus, you bought me coffee this morning, he adds. I couldn't kick anyone out after something like that. Adam's whole face starts glowing with happiness, and his thank you is breathless and so sincere that it hurts. It's fine, Chris mumbles, blushing. But before he can say anything else, Adam's leather-clad arms are around him, and he's breathing in the scent of horses and grass and fresh air. And it's not at all what he thought a homeless person would smell like, but it's really nice. They eat dinner in the kitchen this time, and if Adam eating a hot dog was bad, then Adam eating spaghetti is for some inexplicable reason so much worse. He makes these moaning noises and licks the fork, and by the time his plate is clean, Chris is half hard and bright red from head to toe. Do you not, have food in Andalasia? He asks. Because he's really not that good of a cook. He has no idea what Adam's thinking. Oh, we have food, Adam says, but it all sort of tastes the same. It's not as real as this is. It's all light and tasty and clean and sort of boring. This, though, this is amazing. And then he's slurping up the last few strands of pasta. And Chris has to look carefully at the wall behind Adam's head because he's really getting sort of uncomfortable here. He wonders for a second what sex is like in Andalasia and how it would compare to the kind of sex he's used to. Just for a second. And then he catches himself sort of fantasizing about a crazy person from a made-up place and shuts that line of questioning down hard. His curiosity gets the best of him, though. When they're sitting in front of the TV watching Friends, which Adam discovered just last night but is already obsessed with. They were on a break, but he still shouldn't have done that, he says to Chris seriously, and Chris tries not to laugh. Oh, really? He he asks. What's the etiquette on breaks in Andalasia? He's not even thinking when he says it, really, but Adam stills all of a sudden, and his face softens, confused. I don't... It doesn't... He tries. Chris looks at him. In Andalasia, he says finally, there aren't breaks. There's just true love, and true love's kiss, and happily ever after. Oh, really? Chris asks. Yes, Adam says, perfectly serious. Everyone, be it maiden or prince or enchanted beast, finds their true love and marries them and lives happily ever after. It's just how it works. Well, except for... He pauses, an odd sadness falling like a curtain over his face. Except for? Chris asks, curious, but Adam just shakes his head. I'm tired, he says abruptly, and Chris turns off the TV and lets it go. The next morning, though, Adam seems back to his old self, singing out the window to a group of pigeons and complaining when Chris won't let them in the apartment. Let's go shopping, Chris says as a compromise. A strange part of him wants to blow his next month's rent by taking Adam on some extravagant designer shopping spree, but the rational side of his brain overrules that part, luckily, and they head to the flea market. Adam, looking at costume jewelry racks and racks of vintage leather jackets, is like watching a cat set loose in a fish processing plant. He runs wildly from thing to thing, then stops at one table and mouth breathes over the huge antique rings for a minute or two, then gets all revved up and runs around again. Chris, for his part, just leans against the chain link fence at the edge of the lot and tries to stop smiling. His jaw is starting to hurt. When they leave, they have four jackets, an entire paper bag full of jewelry and belts, and something with spikes that Chris cannot for the life of him identify. Adam is practically skipping, he's so happy. And when his hand brushes past Chris's on one particularly joyous bounce, Chris slips his fingers into Adam's. Adam's hand is big and warm and calloused. Sword practice, of course, he says when Chris asks him. And at this point, Chris would have been more surprised if the answer had been anything else. In fact, he maybe thinks the idea of Adam brandishing a sword is kind of hot. For his part, Adam looks a little taken aback by the hand holding at first, but then his mouth quirks up and he holds on tightly, and Chris lets out the breath he's been holding and rests his head very gently against Adam's shoulder, watching out for the jostling of the spikes as they walk down the crowded sidewalk. Chris's plan for that night begins with dinner. I'm taking you out, he says to Adam, and Adam uses that as an excuse to make Chris wear one of the jackets he bought that day. I don't eat with peasants, Adam says haughtily. At least, not where the people can see, he amends. Chris puts on the jacket. The restaurant is small and classy and quiet, one of Chris's favorite, and they eat by candlelight. Everything is going perfectly until he looks down at the menu and remembers that it's an Italian restaurant, and he groans internally when Adam orders spaghetti carbonara with a rapturous look on his face. Even though it's difficult, with the noises Adam is making and the way he keeps licking his fork, Chris does manage to keep his mind out of the gutter enough to carry on a conversation. They talk about their families. Chris explains how his parents were worried for him when he moved away from Arkansas, but they believe in him and they support him. And plus, his brother's still living in the basement of their house, so he totally looks like the good son in comparison. The king and queen are wonderful parents, Adam says. They didn't mind when I left to travel the world for a few years. And really, they haven't pressured me at all to find my true love. A lot of royal parents do, you know, because they're concerned about the succession and all that. Mother and father, though, they haven't said a word to me. Still, I know they worry, and what happened with that orphan maiden can't have helped. There aren't many disadvantaged lasses that come around, you know, he says to Chris. Right, Chris says, he really has no idea what they're talking about anymore. But true love is the most important thing, after all, Adam says wistfully. If it wasn't right with that one, then I'll just have to search the world for another maiden in need of a handsome prince. You don't happen to know any, do you? He asks. Maidens? Chris asks. No, not really. Oh, Adam says sadly. That's why I came here, you know. I was pushed down the well, really. But it was all for the best. I do want to find my true love. But this is such a strange land, where the maidens don't even wear dresses, and there isn't a palace. You came here to find a maiden? Chris is hoping he's got this wrong, but Adam nods at him. Yes, I did find one in Andalasia, but it didn't work out. Why not? Asks Chris. He sort of thinks he might know, but, he's been wrong about things like this before. It wasn't true love, Adam says simply. Chris wants to ask how he knew, but mostly he just wants to stop talking about this, because it's making him feel sort of sick and achy. Unlike the other night, though, Adam suddenly seems to want to talk more about it. He slurps up some more spaghetti and then looks at Chris, eyes wide and innocent. Do they not have true love in this land? He asks. He sounds disappointed a little, maybe even frightened. I don't know, Chris says. He's never really thought about it. I guess so. I mean, my parents love each other, and they've been together their whole lives, so sure, that's true love, if you want to give it a label. Adam's still looking at him, confusion clouding his clear blue eyes. But you? You've never found your true love? Says Chris. What makes you say that? You're alone, Adam says, like it's the most obvious answer in the world. If you had found your true love, you would be together, living happily ever after. His voice chills off. I'm not alone, Chris says, suddenly indignant. You're my roommate now, right? Anyway, not everyone goes around looking for true love, Adam. Relationships just don't work that way. You meet someone, you maybe try dating or something. It usually doesn't last forever. People like my parents are the lucky ones, not the norm. Adam looks simultaneously devastated and defiant. Everyone can find true love, he says, a little too loudly. The couple next to them turns to look, forks halfway to their mouths. Oh yeah? Chris asks. What about you then? Where's your true love? Adam says, and he looks so lost all of a sudden. I found her, and it should have worked. But it didn't. It was true love, and I can't figure out why. He's twisting his rings now, anxious, and Chris feels like the worst person in the world. Maybe I'm just a freak, Adam says softly, and Chris clenches his napkin under the table. You're not, Adam, he says. You're not a freak. You're not a freak. You'll find someone, he had been about to say. But the person he thinks of when he says the word someone is, it's him, which is scary and unexpected and impossible, because Adam's version of true love seems to be instantaneous and permanent. And he's met Chris, lived with him for 2 days, and he's still moaning about never meeting his other half while they're on what Chris had been starting to think of as an actual date. Thank you, Adam says then, all his overwhelming sincerity out in full force. And Chris forces a smile and reaches for the bill. Just because he's suddenly all depressed about the impossibility of a relationship that he didn't even know he was hoping for in the first place doesn't mean Chris is going to kick Adam out of his apartment, though. It doesn't even mean he's going to cut their night short. Because it's not Adam's fault that he has ridiculous ideas about love that don't include Chris. And even though he's sort of maybe broken-hearted on the inside, Chris still can't be anything but nice to Adam. It kind of sucks. Adam's all chatty as they head down to the subway, which he did most of his freaking out about yesterday, but still seems to think is some kind of enchanted metal caterpillar that's been enlarged and contracted to carry people around, or something like that. It's a very confusing theory, and Chris has to admit that he stopped listening halfway through. "Where are you taking me?" he keeps asking, but Chris won't say. "Oh-ho, a quest," says Adam. "What would the first clue be, please?" And then Chris has to think up nonsense clues to keep him distracted for a little while. Whenever Adam gets one right, his face does that light-up thing that's becoming so familiar, and Chris has to tamp down the happy skip of his heart. They get off the subway and head down 49th Street. Immediately, Adam's looking around at the posters and signs with childlike joy. "Are we going to see a pantomime then?" he asks, and Chris laughs. "Even better, Adam," he says. "Even better." Chris managed to barter two fairly good tickets to Chicago from his friend, who works part-time at the box office. And as they take their seats and the lights go down, Adam whispers to him, "Another giant magical mirror?" "Not a movie, no," Chris whispers back. "I told you this was better. You'll see." Then the curtain comes up on Velma Kelly's bustling jazz hall, and Adam stops talking. When the singing starts, he practically stops breathing. He's so silent and still that Chris almost worries that Adam's fallen asleep, that he's totally miscalculated and ruined everything. But when he glances over at the seat next to him, Adam's anything but unconscious. He's sitting up straight and still, just looking, his fingers clenched tightly in Chris's sleeve, and it looks like he's discovering magic all over again. In the dark of the theater, Chris feels himself smile, wide and happy. When they exit onto the dark street, Adam still hasn't said a word. "So," Chris asks, cautious, did you like it?" Adam shakes himself out of some internal reverie, turning all his scarily intense focus on Chris. "It... Chris!" He falls silent, then tries again. This happens all the time? All those songs? The costumes? The audience?" Chris laughs. "Yeah, man, this is Broadway. But it doesn't just happen here. Plays, musicals, they happen all over the country, dude. All over the world. Sometimes people even make movies. Giant magic mirror shows out of them." Adam thinks for a second. "And the people who do this, they're apprenticed? Trained from birth? Blessed by a fairy godparent? Or bewitched by a sorcerer for his entertainment? Or..." "Nope," says Chris. "Just regular old people who can sing well and act, and who want to do this for a living. Anyone can audition, man. You could audition." "Me?" Adam asks. "I could... would they..." "You can sing better than most of those people," Chris says. "And I mean it, man. You should try out for a show. I really think you could do it. You'd want to do it?" "Oh, yes," Adam says, breathless. He wraps Chris up in his big arms again. Chris breathes and tries not to cling to Adam with both hands, tries not to burrow his head into Adam's jacket and hide there. And then Adam pulls back and looks down, looks right into Chris's wide-open eyes. And for one moment, just one moment, Chris thinks. Then Adam lets him go, and Chris shakes it off. It's sort of awkward on the way back. They sit next to each other on the train, Adam lost in his own world. Maybe literally, Chris thinks. And Chris looks at his hands and tries to get a hold of himself. He's agreed to let Adam move in with him now, and this awkward crush thing will just have to be suppressed before it makes his life miserable. It's just that, well, it's gonna be hard. Chris looks over at Adam, his peaceful, dreamy expression, the soft tilt of his freckled mouth, the way the glitter in his hair is smudged down the side of his neck, and his crown is starting to slip off sideways. Adam sees him looking, and his eyes light up. He flashes a warm, wide grin, all shining teeth and happiness, and Chris can barely breathe. He digs his fingernails into the gross plastic of the seat and tries to get it together. "I can't believe you did this for me tonight," Adam says as they head back through the streets, darkness like a heavy blanket in the air around them. His hand reaches out to grab hold of Chris's, something he's been doing ever since the morning at the flea market, like a proud puppy with a new trick. It's too much all of a sudden, and Chris snatches his hand back, buries it deep in his pocket. Adam looks surprised for a second, then ashamed, as though he's done something wrong, broken some custom he wasn't even aware of. "No," Chris thinks, but he doesn't say anything. If he opens his mouth now, things he can't ever say will come tumbling out, and he'll ruin everything. He keeps his mouth closed and tries not to look as Adam hesitates before putting his hand in his own pocket, like he doesn't quite know what to do with it now. The four flights up to his door feel longer than ever, and there's a growing silence between them now that makes Chris's skin itch and pull. Adam looks more and more worried, anxiety a growing shadow over his handsome features. And then Chris opens the door, and all thought halts because there's a dude in his apartment. "What the fuck?" he shouts, just as Adam yells out, "Anoop!" and lights up all over, instantaneous. "You know this guy?" Chris asks. The dude, who's wearing some kind of medieval costume or something, trusts the one person in the world Adam actually knows to be as insane as he is, sees Adam and fucking drops to his knees, kneeling there on Chris's crappy linoleum floor. "Of course," Adam says, seeming shocked that Chris is taking this whole intrusion with anything less than perfect calm. "This is my squire." Well, Chris thinks, he probably should have seen that one coming. "Why did he break into the apartment, though?" Chris asks. "As my bound vessel," Adam says, like he's explaining something to a very small child. "He has the right, nay, the duty, to attend to my presence at all times. Where I go, he goes. The only thing at all amiss about this situation is that he took so long to find me after that maiden pushed me down the well." He looks disapprovingly at Anoop, who huffs indignantly. "Sire," he says, "I searched for your highness across the seven seas, and even beyond the veil of clouds, but alas..." "Why didn't you just go down the well, though?" Adam asks. The guy straightens and puffs out his chest a little further. "How was I to know the well led to the same land each time? At any rate, I could not locate you even in the fairy forest. I did at last venture down the maiden's well, and at last, here I am." "I've only been here for 3 days," Adam says. "How in the world did you search the entire universe for me in 3 days? Squire Anoop looks shocked. "Highness, it has been a year in Andalasia," he says. Adam pales. "My parents," he starts, and Anoop shakes his head quickly. "They believe you are only off on another youthful adventure," he says, and Adam seems to calm down. "Anyhow, Highness, I apologize for my lateness in reaching you here in this foreign land, but I come bearing wonderful news, at least." Chris is still trying to get his mind around the fact that there really is an Andalasia and a magic well, and that Adam really is a prince. Either that, or this man has the exact same delusions that Adam does, which seems unlikely. And then Anoop starts talking again. "We have located another maiden," he says triumphantly. "What?" asks Adam. He seems shocked, definitely. And there's something else there, something Chris could maybe identify if he could calm down enough to think right now. A maiden, says Anoop, who lives alone in a tower on the very edge of the haunted hill, guarded by an enchanted lion who speaks only in the tongue of birds. All you must do to win her is travel to the magician of the north, who will teach you the lion's language, and then challenge the lion to a duel of wits, and win, of course. And then the maiden will be yours, and you shall live happily ever after. He stops, looking ridiculously self-satisfied, and more than a little relieved. And will she be my true love? Adam asks uncertainly. Of course, says Anoop. He smiles, but he doesn't sound entirely convinced either. Oh, says Adam, so we'll be going back then? Chris has been silent up until now, letting them have their little reunion and trying to reconcile himself to the reality of multiple adjacent universes and rips in the fabric of the physical world and all of that. But all of a sudden, he's had enough. Yes, we'll leave at first light, Anoop says. And Chris surprises himself by shouting, No! Just at the same time that Adam stutters out a, But... They all stop abruptly and look at each other. Chris tries to speak calmly. You can't go back to Andalasia, Adam, he says. Adam looks at him with wide, startled eyes. Why not? He asks, playing with his rings again, Chris notices. Chris thinks fast. The only reason that comes to mind is that Adam can't go back because he needs to stay here, with Chris. Because Chris wants him, and can't lose him, and can't deal with the thought of him running off into the arms of some... Oh. Adam, he says gently, in Andalasia, true love. Is it always with a prince and, well, a maiden? Adam blinks. No, he says. Prince and maiden is the most common form of true love, yes. But sometimes it happens with a huntsman and a princess, or a shepherd and a milkmaid, or an enchanted beast and a lovely young beauty, or... Oh, Chris thinks again. He reaches up and scratches at the back of his neck, blushing. He stares at his toes. It's always a guy and a girl, he asks. There's complete silence in the kitchen. Then Anoop lets out an awkward laugh. Of course, he says. Why, what else could there possibly... The very idea! Absolutely absurd. His voice dies away, though, and all that's left is Adam looking at Chris with the strangest expression on his face, like he's seeing the world, the real world, for the first time. Yes, he says quietly. In Andalasia, I've never heard. There isn't... He stops, swallows, starts again. In your land, he says, it's different? Yeah, Chris says. In my land, in this land, sometimes it's a guy and a girl. Sometimes it's a girl and a girl. Sometimes it's a guy and a guy. The expression on Adam's face is deepening now, changing. He still isn't smiling, though. And his eyes are nervous. You can't believe in true love, though, Adam says. Maybe two men here can, but not true love, right? He looks desperate, and Chris's heart swells and breaks all at once. You don't think it's possible, Adam? He asks. He holds his breath, waiting for the answer, because this can't come from him. Adam's looking right at him now, all that intense, bright focus right on him, like he's the only thing in the room, like nothing else exists. And then some new light paints itself across his face. Oh, he says, almost in awe. Oh! And then he's smiling, so wide, such a fierce happiness that Chris feels the wind knocked out of him yet again. Because it's never been any other way with Adam. I think maybe it can be true love here, Adam says, almost to himself, with a prince and a guy. He laughs, startled by his own joy. and Chris's heart knits itself back together and promptly thuds out of rhythm. "I don't think I'll be going back to Andalasia after all," Adam says to Anoop, without taking his eyes off of Chris for one second. Chris isn't looking away anytime soon either, but out of the corner of his eye, he sees Anoop smile, a little indulgent and a lot fond. "I understand, Highness," he says. "I'll tell your parents you've settled down in a far-off land then, and they can come and visit when their schedules permit. There's always Prince Neil to take the crown, anyhow, so the succession shouldn't be any kind of problem." He hesitates and smiles again. "I'll be leaving now, Highness," he says. "May you live happily ever after." And then he's out the door, and it's just Chris and Adam, alone in the cramped kitchen with the fridge rattling behind them and the city sky just barely starting to lighten outside the window. Chris feels frozen, still struggling to breathe, and it's a relief when Adam's the first one to move. He walks across the tiny space slowly, still smiling, with something close to bliss. And then he's right in front of Chris, almost touching, but not quite. I don't not believe in true love," Chris says suddenly, his words tumbling helplessly out of his mouth, still staring at Adam. "I think maybe it could be real. Maybe it is, because of you, and you and me." He stops, bites his lip. He can feel himself burning bright red. Adam's still looking at him, and Chris sees, suddenly, how he is a prince, how there isn't even any question, because his face is full of confidence and surety, and majesty. There's no other word for it. For a single, ridiculous second, he wants to bow down, to kneel at Adam's feet. And then it passes, and it's just Adam standing in front of him. Royal, maybe, but silly and sweet and naive too, and funny. His friend, and now, suddenly something more. "You know," Adam says, slyness stealing its way into his smile, "we can't have true love yet, or a happily ever after." "No?" asks Chris. He feels stupid and overwhelmed. Gone. "No," Adam says, smile growing broader. "Because before true love, before happily ever after, comes true love's kiss, of course." "I can't believe I didn't see," he says suddenly, desperate. And then before Chris can think for a split second more, Adam's lips are on his, warm and insistent. And the whole world falls away until it's just the two of them. All Chris can feel is Adam's arms around him, Adam's warmth up against him. All he can smell is Adam's grass, and horses, and old leather. And all he can hear is Adam's heartbeat and his own. The kiss is deep, beyond overwhelming, and Chris clings to Adam's broad shoulders and hangs on. It's sort of a blur after that, a hazy mixture of images, bumping into things as they make their way, still kissing, to the bedroom, and tumble down onto the bed. The way Adam's chest looks, freckled and pale in the dawning light. The awe in his eyes as Chris undresses for him, slowly, fingers clumsy with happiness. He moans when Chris touches him for the first time, and then his hands on Chris, cautious at first, but quickly growing confident, strong and sure, and devastating like Adam himself. They fall asleep, tangled and sweaty in the sheets, and when Adam's flock of pigeon friends wakes them in the morning, an insistent cacophony, Chris stretches and yawns and just looks. Adam's black hair is splayed out against the pillow, his arms and legs flung haphazardly everywhere across the bed, smiling even in his sleep. Chris smiles back, presses his sleepy grin into Adam's warm neck, and thinks to himself that it's going to be a very happily ever after indeed. The end.
Yeah.
Reader's notes. Thank you to Yeecock for letting me record her fic. If you'd like to read her fic online, it can be found at yeecock.livejournal.com/5058.html. If you'd like to download this podfic online, it can be found at paticaproductions.com. I'd also like to thank Black Squirrel for bidding on me at the Hoopla Magnet charity auction to raise money for Adam's charity, Charity Water. This podfic is for her. Artwork done by Kate Cat 1010. Thanks for listening.